The reason is because I look in front of you, see all my friends. See many of you come every Friday night, and hopefully you miss me the last couple of weeks, I miss you. Because it's just one of the things you do on a Friday night. So it's wonderful being here again, and I've been off doing my monk thing, because I don't just belong to Perth. There's many other Buddhist organisations, communities, which I have to look after. And by all accounts, that I should be really exhausted. But you're not. You're enjoying your life. It's one thing which I said a few moments ago about just the greatest happiness, wealth, if you like, is your contentment. And contentment is nothing you can buy in a shop. It's not something you need to work for. In fact, if you work for it, it's not contentment. Contentment is there. Anytime, any place, you can be content. It's just a choice, a different way of looking at the mind. Just be happy to be here. And then you have all this incredible contentment, energy, peace and happiness. So I've had an interesting few weeks. I started off by, after I left you, I'd just come back from Thailand before, working really hard. I was really tired and also taught a retreat. Last Friday, I was here. Please excuse me, I apologize. I could not stay to talk to you afterwards. Because I had to rush off to teach a meditation retreat. Because one of the elderly monks was sick and I had to cover for him. And afterwards, the retreat was finished. A committee meeting. And then a marriage as well. And then off to Korea. So I went, South Korea that is, not North Korea. Although I wouldn't mind going to North Korea. Because I like the idea of reconciliation. Taking people who have been apart and bringing them together again. I'm not sure if I told that story before, that I don't know if he's here today, but there was a gentleman who was visiting a monastery in Serpentine, and he insisted on taking me to the airport. And the reason was that he was from Brisbane. If you are listening, you know, you're a hero for me. And he thinks I'm just the bee's knees, because 3 years ago, I went to his house in Brisbane. And for a little ceremony, it's part of the job of a monk, bless this, bless that. You know, you name it, I've blessed it. So one of the reasons, it just gives people a bit of encouragement in their lives. So I went to his house. His youngest son was there, but his eldest son was absent. And I asked, where is he? And the youngest son said he hadn't talked. The father and the son hadn't talked together for 7 years. They haven't even seen each other for 7 years. They've been estranged. And that really sort of hurts my heart. I hope it hurts your heart. It's called compassion. You've got empathy. You feel for people. How can a father and son be apart for 7 years, never sending any birthday cards or Christmas cards or telephone calls or anything? But I know I do have some authority. So I am a senior monk, I'm well known. And some people are actually afraid of me. They are. Now there's no reason you should be afraid of me. I'm a very gentle monk. Going off track, I can never forget the silly thing I did once when I was visiting my mother in London years ago when she was still alive. I went to visit her, and staying in her house, she was making my one meal a day in the morning for me. Now that's really important. If you only eat one meal a day, if you've only got one chance every day, you've got to make sure it hits the spot. So when somebody rang her doorbell, I volunteered to answer it so my lunch would not be spoiled. It's totally selfish. I went to the door, and it was a type of person, anyone from maybe UK might know this, they call them gypsies. They're just itinerant people who've been in that country for hundreds of years. But they decide they do not wish to live in permanent houses. They usually live in caravans going from place to place, and good on them if they want to live like that. But they have a reputation for trying to actually solicit funds, you know, doing silly things. So as one of these women, she knocked on the door. She said, "Would you like to buy some gypsy heather?" Just weeds, basically. And I was very polite. I said, "No, thank you." And she said to me, "If you don't buy some of this heather, I will put a gypsy curse on you." It was a marketing technique. Now imagine somebody threatening to curse me. They didn't know who they were messing with. I had my robe on, but you know, I stood up really tall in my robe and I looked her in the eye and said, "I am a very senior Buddhist monk. My curses are much stronger than yours." That's what I said. And I overdid it, honestly, I really overdid it. Because that woman, her eyes went wide, her jaw dropped, she turned around, and she actually ran. She ran away. So we never curse anybody, but I do use that, you know, in case people mess with me, then I can always mess back. Because people have all these superstitions, Buddhist monks, healing monks, what can they do? They don't know. But they tried to mess with me, so I messed back with them. So anyway, I know, okay, I shouldn't have done that, but actually I'm quite happy I did. It makes a good story. So anyway, so that's just how, so you know, curses, you don't really have curses, but people don't know that. So at this house, you know, I told the youngest son, "Have you got your brother's telephone number?" He said, "Sure." "Call him right now." So he got out his smartphone, he called his younger brother. He said, "Give the phone to..." His older brother, sorry, the one who was estranged. "Give the phone to me." And I said, "I am Ajahn Brahm. You know me?" He said, "Oh yeah, I know you. I listen to your talks, you know, on YouTube." And they said, "I command you to come to your father's house. You better come or else." And I hung the phone up. So this poor man, he hadn't seen his father for 7 years. He was either coming to break that estrangement or risk the curse and bad karma of not obeying a very senior monk. Of course, there's no bad karma there, but you know, people don't really know this. And so, yeah, let's use whatever you've got to solve the situation. So they came. He came in, but wouldn't look at his father, wouldn't talk to him, but it was the first time 7 years in the same room. And I sat them down together, and they were looking this way, not at each other. And I asked the father, "One amazing thing, and it shows you just how stupid people can be," he said, "What did your son do 7 years ago that, you know, you got so upset you won't even talk to him or look at him?" You know what he said? "I can't remember." So I looked at the son, the eldest son. "What did your father do?" "I can't remember either." Human beings, they're just so lovable. They're so cute, you know, just stupid but lovable. So I said, "Okay, enough's enough. Forgiveness time." I forget who did it first. I said, and I led them. So, okay, father, look at your son, or son, look at your father. I forget who did it first. Say to your father, look at them, and say for the first time in 7 years the speech. "Father, whatever you've done by body, speech or mind, which has irritated me, whatever it was, or really hurt me deeply, I forgive you." And the other way around too. "Son, whatever you've done, I forgive you back." They're reconciled. It's such a beautiful thing to do. All you needed was somehow or other to get overcoming that pride. "If I'm not going to forgive him, he's got to ask forgiveness first, and then okay, he's got to make the first move." And we're always waiting till we die for the other person to make the first move. And that's why a circuit breaker like a monk can actually do that. So when I did go to Korea, I was thinking maybe of that story. Maybe I could go and see Kim Jong-un and said, "Why have you not spoken to all your friends south of the border for such a long time?" No, seriously, you know, sometimes that's all that's really needed, a circuit breaker. A way which nobody loses face. So we can talk with each other and get to that higher mind. Yeah, we always have the reasons why we, you know, we've been upset with one another. Yes, there are these. They've done a terrible thing and they've really hurt us. Yes, but isn't there something in life more important than just carrying around the pain, the hurt of years ago? 7 years is more than enough. For me, 7 days, 7 hours, 7 minutes is too much. Why? Because everybody makes mistakes. We all do stupid things. We all just, you know, sometimes either deliberately we do stupid things, but most of the time it's just we don't really mean it. In a bad mood, you said the wrong thing. Oh, crikey, what did I do that for? Wish I hadn't have done that. We do that. Welcome to humanity. People doing stupid things and hurting each other. But don't you remember when you were a kid? You can see these children these days. They really hurt each other in the playground, in the sandpit. They hit each other and they cry and they scream, but they can let go. They actually forgive. And 5 minutes later, your kids who are killing each other now are just playing with each other as if nothing ever happened. And sometimes we look at that and say, why can't we do the same? Exactly, a very good question. Why can't we? Pride is one of the main things. I'm not going to forgive them. I'm not going to let them do the world. I'm not going to let them treat me like a doormat. I think I mentioned that last time, that what happens when people exploit you? They treat you like a doormat. And I know that very well, because they've been exploiting me in Korea, in Hong Kong, last night in Singapore, this weekend in Perth, and next week in Sydney. You use me as a doormat, and thank you for doing that. That is the meaning of my life, to be exploited. Please exploit me. And I'm content to have that happen. The problem with people is they are not content. You have all these plans and demands from yourself and from life, and you expect from life far too much. What do you want in life? So when I was off in Korea, there was a World Meditation Masters Conference. It was started, actually the reason behind this, again, Buddhists, Christians, we're all the same. The Pope visited South Korea last year. And the Buddhists are, the Pope visited South Korea. We Buddhists must do something as well. What can we do? We don't have a Pope. And the Dalai Lama can't go there because, you know, Chinese influence and trade and stuff like that. So that was a no-go. So they decided to have, it was based on, I don't know if you remember that, an old movie, The Seven Samurai. You know, this, what was it called? And the seven, whatever it was. Somehow or other, seven is a lucky number, especially in South Korea. That is a lucky number, seven. And so they decided to invite seven famous meditation monks to have a debate. I don't know what they're actually expecting. I really thought when they first suggested this, they'd sit all the seven monks together and see who could meditate the longest. The first person to move loses. Or even better, psychic powers. Come on, Tibetan, lift up in the air. Ajahn Brahm, come on, see how far you can go. I'm the one who levitated the highest, you know. But it's not like that, being a senior monk. You don't compete at all. That is just not part of Buddhism. No competing with each other. We just enjoy each other's company. But anyway, in the end, they could only get four to go over there. So I was one of them. Many of those ones are just too old. They shouldn't really go there anyway. So one of the most important features of being a wise monk is you're supposed to be old. So I don't really qualify yet for being a wise monk, because I'm not old enough. And I, as you said, I'm the baby monk. I wish I was. So anyway, but what we did do there, they wanted us to go, this was in the mountains of Korea. And this was in in just, was it February? Yeah, I think just the end of February. And this was deep winter, and the mountains were full of snow. And we went right to the very top, one of the highest peaks in the region. It was actually a ski resort. And they asked me if I could bodyboard, and I said, well, actually, it should be with a body like this. I will not need a board. But then, no, we can't do things like that. But what they wanted us to do was to do this walk, and it was going to be called the Saint's Walk afterwards. Yeah, it is. That's marketing again. But anyway, it was minus 15 degrees. Minus 15. And when I left, it was 42 plus here. From 42 to minus 15. And it was on national TV, because it's a big event in Korea. You know, focusing on Buddhism and all different Buddhist monks coming from overseas, walking in the snow, minus 15 degrees. And after a while, I found all the cameras, they weren't looking at me or the other monks, they were looking at my feet. Because I never had any socks on. Just my sandals and bare feet. And they thought, wow! Ajahn Brahm won the seven meditation masters. God, I did win, I was just messing around. But, they were wondering, how can you just walk minus 15 degrees in the snow, thick snow, with no socks on? It's just so easy. Just be content. Be happy to feel cold. And then there's no problem. It's when I don't want to be cold. This cold is going to be bad for me. I'm going to get frostbite. My feet, my toes are going to all fall off. I better count them before I go back to the hotel afterwards. What's going to happen to me? I'm going to get gangrene. No, that's not the case. Because I always figured out a long time ago that cold is good for you. It's good for you. People who live in cold places live much longer. They have a much longer life. And the reason is, it's the same reason why you put things in the refrigerator to extend their life. It's obvious, it's science. That's why my feet were fine, they were frozen, didn't feel a thing. But you can see, all this stuff which you have to do, you know, in my life, you can see just how I make it fun. I don't care what it is. Walking in the snow with no socks on, so with the TV cameras on, you know, that's not what I signed up for. When I became a monk, I thought you wouldn't be in TV cameras, you'd be meditating, live a really simple life, no one bothering you, bye-bye world, and now look at me. It won't be long before they get me to have sponsors. Nike, just do it. or whatever it is. Ajahn Brahm only drinks Dilmah tea. The secret of enlightenment. Or whatever else it is, I don't know. That's crazy stuff. But yeah, you have fun with this stuff, but you don't really get into it. So that's the contentment which you were having when you were, and also messing around, talking with some of these other monks, really senior monks, those who are leading Buddhist monks from different traditions, talking with each other. But there was no competition. Because the idea of trying to be the best, I'm better than you, that is the total opposite of contentment. When you're content, you're just happy to be yourself. You don't give a damn what other people, they're better than you or worse than you. But actually, over these years, there's no one who's better than me or worse than me. You know, just because I sit up here doesn't mean that I'm better than you guys. It just means so you can see me. That's the only reason. So, it doesn't mean any idea of superiority or inferiority. Because that is one of the things which really causes havoc in our society. Who is the best and who is the worst? And so many people, too many people, they always take up, I'm the worst. That's one of the reasons I really dislike grading people. And that starts at school, for goodness sake. How can you grade a kid? And stigmatize a kid from the very beginning. Oh, you're a bad student. Oh, you're really a good student. You are a dummy. You are a genius. There is no such things. One of the reasons why I explain to people, because kids haven't had this explained to them. The grading system, A, B, C, D, E, F. Do you know what F means? If you get an F on some school, it means fantastic. E means excellent. And A means arrogant. Turn it around, for goodness sake. Because what that's doing is stopping this judge, I'm better than you. What's it like, say, in a marriage? And who's the best? Who's the wisest? Who makes the decisions? Who, I used to say who wears the trousers, but everyone wears trousers these days. So, who is the best? The only people who don't wear trousers these days are the monks. We haven't got any, we stick to the old fashioned. But anyway, who, actually no, the Korean monks, they wear trousers. The Theravada monks, we wear the skirts. So there's something going on there. I often tell people that some of these places, like in Korea, they don't really have much English signs. So it's always a problem when I go to countries like Korea, when you want to go toilet, because you know you can't read the sign. So you just have to look at the figure on the outside of the wall. And that's why sometimes I look at the figure and I look at me and go in the wrong room. I wear a dress. Actually, that's only a joke. You figure it out. So when you are learning how to be content, you can do all this crazy stuff. So even going to Hong Kong, but I don't know if there's any Indonesians here. The most craziest photographers are the Indonesians. Please excuse me. Because I was in, there's always Indonesians everywhere. In Korea, and in Hong Kong, and in last night in Singapore. And they always come up and line up to take photos of me. I can't figure that. Why do people want to take photos of an old fat monk? I'm not particularly hot. What do you want to do that for? But they love it for some peculiar reason. There's much wisdom which I have. There's some things which are totally beyond me, and that's one of them. That is one of the things which I haven't really found out why. But they do that. And sometimes you think, why are people taking photographs of me? Look, one of the lovely stories, they're not here today, but there's a couple of people with me can attest to this. Flying from Perth to Bali, as going to a conference. Conference? No, it was actually a retreat in Indonesia. And that's, you know, I fly a lot these days. And as soon as you go in the aircraft, Garuda. So this talk is also sponsored by Garuda. You know, you know what the Garuda means? It's actually an Indian name for a bird. And it happened once when I was going to Indonesia that the flight got cancelled. Delayed by 24 hours. And I was going to give a talk that night. The talk had to be cancelled. And I remember all these people, you know, at Perth Airport, going up to the counter, and these poor people, you know, working for that airline, having to explain, I'm terribly sorry, we can't do anything about it. There's no plane, it hasn't come. Well, you know, what can I do? People get just so stupid and angry. They get angry at something which they cannot change. Doesn't matter how much you shout at those poor people in the counter, they can't do anything. You're just really cruel to them. So as for me, I thought, oh great, I've got another day in Perth. I always see whatever happens to me in life, I always see something wonderful happen to me. I always see the positive side of this. If I die tonight, wonderful, get to Nibbana earlier. If you get sick, great, at last I can take a rest. If I go to jail, I told people the story. This was a Time monk a long time ago. Tape Sidi Mooney, his name was. He was number two in the hierarchy, because in Thailand they organized it. I don't really agree with that. Organizing it into sort of leaders of monasteries, leaders of districts, leaders of provinces, and then the head monk of Thailand, they call him Sangha Raja, the king of the Sangha. Just like in Sri Lanka, they have Mahanayakas as well. But this is the head of the whole monastic community in Thailand. Why anybody would want to be that leader is crazy. But you know what it's like? Pride and jealousy. People always want to be the top. So anyway, he was a really good monk. He was number two in line. He didn't really care. He was one of these really good ones. But the number three was very, very jealous and wanted to be the number one. But number two was in the way. So you know what he did? It was many, many years ago, where in many countries they were afraid of communism. And in that time in Thailand, it was against the law to be a communist. Just like United States. The reds under the beds scares. So, this monk, just like me, gives many, many talks. Many of them were recorded. And you take a statement here and add it to a statement there and put a statement in between. Mix it all up. You can prove anything. With all the stuff which I have taught, if you splice a statement here, a splice a statement there, you will think that I'm some sort of, even this evening you feel like I'm a follower of Kim Jong-un. You can do anything if you just really have got that bad ideas in your head. And so this person, number two, so number three in line, accused number two of being a communist. And it stuck. And this monk was put in jail. Number two was got rid of by putting in jail for 3 years. But what happened next? Be very careful of Buddhist monks' curses. As he didn't curse, but it's karma. The head monk number one did die. Number three got promoted to being the head monk of Thailand. And one day they were in a... because he was a senior monk, where he would go anywhere, everywhere in with police escort. And had police car in front, police car behind. He was in a very nice car. And a car on the opposite side of the road lost control, went over the median strip and crashed in to the head monk's car and killed him instantly. No one else was even injured. Just one monk was killed. And everybody thought, this must be karma. Why was one monk killed and no one else? They thought, that head monk must have done something very bad. And they looked and saw his past, and that's what they saw. They looked at the evidence and they realized that that monk had been set up and put in jail for something he never did. So they released him. They gave him sort of full pardon. Turned over his conviction. And was he upset? Was he angry? Did he ask for compensation? No way, he said. This was the best 3 years of my life. It was like being on retreat. I'd never had to answer anybody's questions about their marriage, about their jobs, about their children, about their health, about all the stuff which I have to talk about all the time. Didn't have to talk about anything like that. Didn't have to give any talks. Could read any books he liked. Meditated, rest. And it's the best years of his life, he said. Now that is a monk. And he said also, really, really thankfully, he said, because if I had been in jail, I'd have probably got that top job. Now somebody else has got that after me, so I am free. He's a monk who didn't really want to, sort of, he was content anywhere. Content being in jail, content being accused of something he never did. Now that is what a monk is. And it means you can be content anywhere. So for me, I was on this Garuda flight, just the air hostess, a flight attendant, came up to me Actually, she didn't come up to me. She was in the aisle. I was in the window seat. Because I always think the window seats are the best, because at least you only got one person on one side and the other's a window. So at least the window can't ask you questions. It happened. I was on another flight once. Really tired from Kuala Lumpur back to Perth. Sitting on the window seat. And a woman come past and she said, "Oh, you're Ajahn Brahm. I really need to talk to you." And I said, "Oh, well, I'm terribly sorry. There's another fellow who is in the aisle seat. Never mind." And you know what this woman did? She bent down and asked this guy in the aisle seat, "Would you mind exchanging seats?" And I was praying, "Please, please say no, 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 no." And the little bastard, he said yes. So I had this woman all the way from Kuala Lumpur to Perth asking me about her marriage, her relationships, her salon. And I had to come back and give a talk that night as well. This is really unfair. But anyway, it wasn't so bad on the Garuda flight, because the flight attendant just turned around and looked at me and said, "Are you Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yes." And she put her hand over her heart. You know, the flight attendants are very beautiful. She said, "I'm your greatest fan. I love..." If I wasn't a monk many years later, you know, you'd be quite excited at things like that, but, you know, they're way past that stuff. So I said, "Yeah, I am." He said, "Oh, you're just a wonderful monk. I've got really good service." But interestingly, Indonesians... She came up, you know, once they'd given the meal service, she came up to me and said, "Would you please come to the galley?" You know, that's the back of the plane where all the flight attendants hang out. And they were all lined up. Photo op. They just don't leave me alone, even on the flight. They want to take photos of me. Every flight attendant, there, smile, click, okay, another one, click, okay, next one. Satu Dua Tika. Those of you know that one, that's 1, 2, 3. You know, that's, I don't know anything past 3 in Bahasa Indonesia, because you only need 1, 2, 3 to take the photo. First one, I know Satu Dua Tika. That's 1, 2, 3 in Bahasa. 4, I don't know what 4 is. They never actually say that. It's just 1, 2, 3, smile. But anyway, but they're all lined up. And if you've ever been on the back of the aircraft, the galley, now when anybody presses the, you know, calling the flight attendant, you know, the light goes on there. All these lights were going on, ding, 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 ding. Because this was an Australian flight, well, you know, from Perth to Bali. Most of the people on there were Aussies going surfing or holidays. And they all were pushing the button for a beer. And they couldn't get any beer, because all the flight attendants were having photographs with me. So they were not happy with me. I think they lost a lot of faith in Buddhism, because when I was there, they couldn't get a beer. But what are they doing that for? You know, just crazy people. But I get so content with doing crazy stuff. So when they come along, they want to take a photograph, why not? So smile and enjoy it. Be content. Even doing stuff which was not in my contract when I first signed up to become a monk. Makes people happy, makes you happy telling these stories. So anyway, let's get even more interesting, the sort of stuff I get up to. After leaving Korea, I went to Hong Kong to do a meditation retreat. You know where we held the meditation retreat in Hong Kong last weekend? In Disney World. I saw a meditation retreat in Disney World, Hong Kong. That's the sort of crazy stuff which I love. So the first night we had the meditation in the, because it's a Disney World hotel, so they it's brand. So the first night we had the meditation in the Sleeping Beauty room, which is not a good place to meditate. Everyone was falling asleep and nodding. Sort of thought. So we moved to the Snow White room. That was much better. The Snow White room, a much better place to meditate. Because Snow White, purity and virtue and goodness and kindness. But all the interviews, when we have a retreat, we give personal interviews about their meditation. They chose the interview room to be, because I was sitting there all the time, people coming in to ask their questions, and then to go out, someone else would come in. That was in the Prince Charming room. So I sat so many hours in the Prince Charming room. I thought that was very sweet and appropriate. So you can see, people think, okay, that's really stupid. Inappropriate, you shouldn't be in such a hotel to do spiritual stuff. This is serious business, becoming enlightened, meditating, and Disney just do not match. Why not? Because I love just experimenting, pushing boundaries. Don't always do the same thing. I mentioned one of my favorite sayings, because in Hong Kong I met one of these professors, and they teach 6 months of the year in Dalhousie University in Halifax, Nova Scotia. Quite a famous university, Dalhousie. I've got a disciple in there. So when I went to visit there, they asked me to go and have tea with the president, the boss. He's like the vice chancellor. And so one of because he was also a physicist, and so I'm a physicist as well as being a monk. So I asked him, so what's the motto of your university? And I don't know what he said, but I said, change your motto. So one of my favorite sayings, which I think a few universities should have as their slogan, their motto, where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. I love that motto. Where everybody thinks the same, no one thinks at all. You can see just how people narrow, just the way they look at the world, the way that they think, in their business, in their industry, in their monastery. When you all think the same, there's no innovation, there's no life, it's dead. And universities, of all places, should be places of innovation, R&D, research, development, seeing new things, breaking new ground, taking the sum total of human knowledge further. Not just mulling over and rearranging what we've already found out, but finding out some new stuff. The interest of life, which means it's alive. The interest of what education really means, the great exploration. That's one of my other great sayings from Star Trek. I used to watch Star Trek when I was a young man. But I changed it a little bit, the slogan. Not to boldly go where no one has gone before, but to baldly go. To baldly go where no monk has ever gone before. My slogan from Star Trek. But that, you know, where every time one thinks the same, no one thinks at all. So that is also one of my slogans of life, being a monk. So doing a retreat in Disney, why not? Give it a try. It was really successful. For the reason that many people associate spiritual life with suffering. One of the reasons why religion is declining in the Western world is because it's boring, it's suffering, it's scary, they put you down, you are a sinner, you're going to go to hell unless you give a good donation to our temple. That's fraud. So, all that sort of stuff. No wonder people just crawl away from religion, a bunch of hypocrites. But, when you can actually do something which is a bit more innovative. And those people had a wonderful time. Even the people who went to that retreat, they were really doubtful whether this was an appropriate place to have a good meditation retreat. But some got some incredibly good meditation. They had good food, a quiet place to sleep at night, nice clean shower. It was comfortable. And that's really what they needed, to relax and rest, to take off the tension. Fighting against discomfort, wherever that comes from, that is tense. To be able to relax, a nice place to sleep at night, soft beds, nice food, that was important for them. They had a great time. Well worth what they had to pay. And just the whole idea of Disney, bit of fun, relaxation, peace, kindness. That was right in the part of the retreat. It was called a kindfulness retreat. And of course, that's the other thing which I keep on doing to try in the mindfulness movement, making a lot of inroads. You know, talking to professors in the hospitals and in the universities over in Hong Kong, making inroads into taking mindfulness, which is so last decade mindfulness. People are spreading this in industry and in your corporations and in the psychology rooms, mindfulness, mindfulness, mindfulness. I'm almost sick of mindfulness now. Just hear it too much. And it's not good enough. Again, it's just everyone thinking the same again. Flavor of the month, fashion. So always push it forward, make it better, improve it. Add the kindness, for goodness sake. A little bit of kindness, once you understand what that is, means kindfulness, and that it changes the whole situation, and that really is powerful. So, I like to teach the kindfulness, and because that's how I practice. I'm kind to myself, I'm kind to others. I'm not just aware, I'm kind as well. At least I hope I am. I'm trying my best to be kind to everybody, to be kind enough to you. You're here for an evening. A few funny stories make you laugh, but also in between that, some really deep teachings as well. People underestimate my power. They think this is just a joke. It ain't. The joke is just like the trick of a hypnotist. You don't realize the message which is going through. How many of you watch advertisements? And the advertisements are usually very funny. Sometimes like an imbecilic type of funny. It works. Humor draws people in. And that's where the message comes in. And it's a good message for you, because I'm never trying to control you, but to liberate you. So you can be content with yourself, for goodness sake. You are more than good enough. So I remember just talking to some of these really old Chinese ladies. Well, there was 88. I said, "You're just so beautiful. So wonderful." I can say that because I'm a monk. If you say that to somebody, you'll be in big trouble. But actually to build a person up, to give them some acknowledgement because they trusted me, that you are more than okay. It's one of the reasons I do not approve of the self-improvement movement. The whole idea of self-improvement is wrong on two scores. Number one, you don't need to be improved. You are more than good enough. Each one of you has a place. Like I've often mentioned here, the trees in the forest. There's not a tree in the forest which is perfectly straight and so-called perfect. Every tree is crooked and bent and damaged. Go and have a look in a forest. They're all damaged. That's called nature. And that makes them incredibly beautiful. The more crooked the tree, the more bent, the more damaged, the more I like them. So are you crooked and damaged? Yes, you are. That's why you're beautiful. That's why you belong. That's what perfection is. You don't have to be improved. So that's the first thing, self-improvement, for goodness sake, you don't need to be improved. On the second score, many of you have been here long enough, you know what Buddhism teaches, there's no self anyway, so what the heck are you trying to improve? At my retreat, it was a buffet service for breakfast and lunch, but we had two lines for our buffet service. We had those who weren't enlightened yet, and that was self-service. And those people who are already enlightened, we call that no self-service. It's a Buddhist joke, okay. See, I am damaged goods. I'm crooked and bent, tell stupid jokes. And I probably told that the last time as well. But never mind. So that is how you can learn how to be content with your life, no matter what you have to do in your life. Yeah, you have to work hard to get by in life. But I have to work hard. But you know, I never say, why me? Why do I have to give the Friday night talk? Why do I have to answer all these questions? Why do you ask me questions of marriage when I've never been married? About your job when I've never had a proper job? Why do you ask me about kids when I've never had any kids? Why do I... I never think, why me? Because, you know, people reminded me that years and years ago I gave the answer. And if ever you think in life, why me? Why do I have the cancer? Why is I, you know, find it hard to have a relationship? Why can't I? Everyone else is having a good time. Why me? And the answer is, why not? That really is a study. I actually got that from a cartoon once. You know, Hagar the Horrible. Do you know that Hagar the Horrible? So he's a great cartoon. He was shipwrecked on an island. You know, shipwrecked, storm, and he looked up in the skies and said, God, why me? And God roared back, why not? Now that's actually quite deep. Simple, but very profound. I don't like philosophers who write books. I like cartoons which actually tell the truth. So that's positive attitude. Did I mention the Snoopy cartoon about 3 weeks ago? Somebody said this brilliant cartoon from Peanuts. Peanuts cartoon. The reason why those cartoons are funny is because they're incredibly smart. Positive attitude. There was Charlie Brown and Snoopy. You know, the two main characters of Peanuts cartoon. Charlie Brown and Snoopy sitting on the edge of the pier in front of this beautiful scenery. And Charlie Brown says to his dog, you know, all of us one day will die. And Snoopy, incredibly wise dog, replies, yes, all of us most days will not die. Now that is positive vibe. Yeah, all of us one day will die. That can make you depressed. But when you say all of us most days will not die, that is truth. Going over to Korea and Hong Kong, they're all really scared of all these flus. SARS, they're still scared of SARS, MERS, whatever that is, avian flu, Chinese influenza and Zika and goodness knows what else people get these days. You know, some people will get that, but most people won't. Yeah, your relationship. Some relationships don't last. Most do. Someday you will split up. Most days you do not. Can you see the difference? We get so negative and afraid and jealous. My partner is so beautiful that someone will take him or her. What happens if that never happens? What happens if it doesn't occur? We are so afraid. What would happen if I don't pass the exams? What happens if the biopsy turns out to be negative? The answer is, what happens if it doesn't? Looking at the future with a negative mind is called fear. Looking at the future with a positive mind is called hope. For me, I don't even bother to look at either. Stay in the present moment and be content. Most days, you won't die. That's a good reason to be content. Thank you for listening. Good night. Okay, so questions and answers. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Very good. Let's see what we've got here. Aha, they've got the cartoon. Someone's got the cartoon here, if you can see it. Snippy cartoon. It says that. It says here, someday we will all die, Snoopy. True, but on all the other days we will not. Very nice.
Hang on, okay,
I have some questions, not just cartoons.
Yeah,
okay, go on.
Sorry.
Okay, no trouble.
Okay, some questions here. Here we go.
From UK, Indonesia, oh no, they're not talking about photographs. No. And from UK. This is the pain. I have suffered chronic pain daily for 13 years and come to really hate and fear pain. When I try to meditate, the pain is also sitting on the cushion with me. I don't want to sit quietly with it. I want to get rid of it rather than be curious or compassionate towards it. I just want my body back. Any advice? If you do have chronic pain, it's obvious that trying to find some solution to it is near impossible. So, for the person in the UK, there is another way. When you say, I don't want the pain, that is the problem. It's actually to change your mind to having a life which embraces the pain, is with the pain, not trying to get rid of it anymore. And that is very powerful. And if you can do that, you will be just such a spiritually advanced person. There is in my first book, which is Opening the Door of Your Heart, there's a poem by Jonathan Wilson Fuller. I cannot quote it word for word, but it goes something like, pain can be a useful part of life. It teaches us to keep our foot away from the thorn, our hand out of the fire. But there are some types of pains which have no purpose at all. Chronic pain, which is a destroyer of happiness and a threat to life. Yet, said this poet, even chronic pain has a purpose. The possibility of life and happiness in spite of the pain. He said it is a challenge which is very hard and a victory which is very personal, which no one else can understand. And that victory of a life in spite of the pain, not without the pain, in spite of it, is a victory so personal and wonderful. And the reason I put that in that book, the reason why when I read that I was gobsmacked, I was just, wow, was that Jonathan Wilson Fuller wrote that when he was 7 years of age. It's in my book. 7 he was when he wrote that. His pain, chronic pain, had made him a saint, an incredibly wise person at such a young age. So from the fellow from UK, please get hold of that book and read that little poem by the 7-year-old. It is possible. It can be done. That is one of the reasons I put that in the book. It's a hard, it's a challenge, but it's worth it. From Indonesia, I know someone who manipulates and cheats on others, leaving them with emotional scars. He said he doesn't believe in karma. Does karma exist if you don't believe it? Of course it does. Does the sun exist if you can't see it? It's night time now in Perth. We can't see the sun, but I guarantee it's there. Tomorrow morning, I will tell you, I told you so. So it's true that sometimes you can't see karma, but it's still there working in the background. In other words, well, this is by the way, thought comes up. There was a medium in the United States between the First and Second World War called Edgar Cayce, C-A-Y-C-E. Now many people claim all sorts of stuff, but he was investigated a lot. He was the real deal. C-A-Y-C-E. Amazing stuff if you read some of his books. But he was a Baptist, I think, a very devout Christian. This was in the 1930s. A very devout Christian, and one, he would go in trance, and then he'd be able to diagnose all sorts of incredible treatments, which actually were true. Okay, I'm just going to go and tell this one story, which really blew my mind. People would come to him and say, my grandma, she's very, very sick. He'd go and transfer, so what can we help her with? Sometimes he'd say, you can't, she's going to die. Other times, take this medicine. And this was not normal treatment. It was maybe really weird medicines or weird concentration, weird combinations and doses which were not usual at all. So one day somebody took their son or something to see him, went in a trance, he said, oh yeah, that can be cured with this medicine, gave the name, and then came out of trance. And when they went to the drugstore, drugstores in those days, United States, and we haven't heard of that medicine. So they put him back in trance again. He said, oh, you'll find it, this was in Virginia somewhere, you'll find it in a drugstore in St. Louis, Missouri, I think, St. Louis, Missouri. Anyway, St. Louis, you know, on the Mississippi. So they didn't have emails then, they had to telegraph. So they sent a telegraph, half an hour later the telegraph came back, we don't know that medicine anywhere in that drugstore. Put him in trance again, and he said, you'll find it in that drugstore, in the second room in the back, third shelf from the left, in the back, whatever it was. And so they sent that, the telegraph, and the telegraph came back half an hour later, found it. It was incredible stuff this guy was up to. But one day, they asked him, in the trance, so what is the most important law in the universe? This was about 1932 or something. A devout Christian, and he said, karma, the law of karma. And when he came out afterwards, it devastated him. I'm a Christian. I don't believe in karma, but that's what he said in trance. It is one of the most fundamental laws, whether you believe in it or not. And if you manipulate and cheat on others, please, you can protect yourself from manipulation and cheating. I say this almost every other week. Someone cheated you. What happens? You keep thinking, they cheated me, they cheated me, they cheated you. Every time you think of that, they're cheating you again. For goodness sake, if they cheated you once, stop thinking about it. Learn from it. Make sure that you pluck up all those holes in your faith, defense, whatever you wish to call it, to make sure that you don't get done again. But only allow them to cheat you once. They can cheat you out of your money, out of your husband, your wife, out of your property, but they don't have any reason to cheat you out of your happiness and peace if you don't let them. That is your most important property. Your happiness, peace of mind, good health. No one can cheat you out of that unless you let them. Lastly, from UK, could Jesus have been a bodhisattva? Well, anything is possible. But maybe, because it's getting late now, because it's 9 o'clock, maybe can you send that question to the Pope and ask him? I will defer. Okay, so thank you again for those questions. Any questions from the floor before we finish? You have one. You get some cramps. Yeah. Congratulations. Be content with the cramps. So what do you do when you get the cramps? Move. Massage. Be kind. Which is part of contentment. Contentment doesn't mean just sitting there with a broken leg. Oh, I'm content. Ambulance that comes doesn't come. Doesn't matter. Contentment means being content and knowing what the possibilities are and working within those possibilities. Being content with what you can do in life and what you can't do. And when you know what you can do, what you can't do, you have total contentment. Always say, if there's something you can do, give it everything you've got. If there's nothing you can do, just let go. Very simple. That's called contentment. Very good. So in order that your crab doesn't get worse, so we're going to finish now. So we're going to bow three times to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha, and then I'm sure that I'll be very content to have you all lined up asking your questions.